Welcome to the Innovation in Financial Inclusion podcast. I'm Andrew Wallace.
And I'm Paul Vick. We're from Community Finance Solutions at the University of Salford. Community Finance Solutions is a research unit specializing in financial inclusion and affordable credit.
In this episode, we'll be talking about opt-out payroll savings schemes. Under this type of savings schemes, employees are automatically enrolled into the payroll savings schemes unless they opt out.
To learn more about these schemes, we have spoken with Emma Stockdale and Roger Shelton. Emma is a research lead at Nest Insight, a public benefit research and innovation center focusing on finding ways to support low and moderate income workers to be financially secure. Roger is a marketing and business development manager at Transsave, an employer-based credit union which is piloting an opt-out payroll savings schemes with SUAS, one of its employer partners.
Emma, to start off, can you tell us what are opt-out payroll savings schemes?
Yeah, so traditionally where payroll saving is available to employees, an individual has to sign up to save, and things like inertia, present bias, low confidence, they all get in the way of people doing this. Opt-out payroll saving flips this so that employees are signed up to save into an accessible savings account, which is contributed to each pay period through payroll unless they opt out. So they work by changing the default. So instead of do nothing, save nothing, it is do nothing, save something. But crucially, it doesn't reduce the choices available to an employee or their right to choose ultimately what to do with their money. Instead, it changes the default to better align people's intentions and their actions.
Thanks, Emma. Roger, if I can turn to you. So Transsave has been piloting an opt-out scheme. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
You mean the specifics of the SUAS scheme?
Yeah.
So exactly what Emma's just outlined, but a live project. So SUAS Recycling Recovery were an existing Transsave UK employer partner, but the partnership was based on a traditional opt-in savings scheme, which was running relatively successfully. But SUAS were quite keen to investigate the opportunities of an opt-out savings scheme. So the scheme was launched in November 2021, and it involved new employees, not the entire workforce, just new employees joining SUAS Recycling from that date were included in this opt-out saving program. The existing opt-in scheme carried on running alongside it.
How would it work from an employee point of view? Would you automatically become a member of Transsave, or would it be through some other means?
Yeah, so as Emma's outlined earlier, so new employees starting from that date were automatically opted into Transsave unless they chose to opt out, as opposed to the traditional mechanism where the payroll savings scheme was just offered as one of a range of employee benefits, and they could choose to opt into it. So that was a crucial difference.
And how long did the what sort of the time period that the trial ran?
It's ongoing. The trial's ongoing. So we're now into nearly 2 years. Certainly 18 months so far.
And how many employees have been sort of covered by this opt-out scheme?
So you mean in terms of people that actually chose not to opt out of it?
No, I just wondered, because you said it was only for new employees that would be covered by it. So how many employees would be in that group?
It varies from month to month, but I think approximately, so as you've got about 100 new joiners a month.
Okay.
So it's... Sorry, Emma.
Sorry, Roger, I interrupted you there.
It's all right, carry on.
I was just going to say, as of February, I think it was about 700 in the control group, and then it looks like about 1,700 in the treatment group total so far as of February.
After speaking with Emma following our interview, she corrected the figures to 1,146 for the control group and 1,778 for the treatment group.
So the control group, Emma, were people that had joined SUEZ in the previous 12 months under the old model, weren't they? So they're people that had opted in to the scheme, and there's about 120 of them ish, is that right?
That probably have possibly joined Transave total of the population available who could join Transave, may have joined, may not have joined. It's about 650, 700.
Yeah.
And so in terms of your experience of as a credit union, what would you say are sort of the main challenges in terms of encouraging people to save, and how do you think the scheme has sort of tried to address these issues?
So the main challenge is typically inertia or lack of awareness. So if an employer launches a payroll saving scheme, you know, they've still got to communicate that to the employee base. That can be reasonably challenging, particularly for employers that have quite sort of fragmented and diverse employee base. So one of the issues is the message just never gets through to the employee in the first place. If it does get through, there is an issue with inertia where people just don't have the confidence to make the move to do it, or they just don't have the time, or a combination of both. So we have a situation where if you, and Emma's probably got more precise figures on this, but if you interview employees and say, would you join a workplace savings scheme given the chance, 80%-ish, I think, will say yes. But in reality, when the scheme's introduced, you're looking at typically, certainly in credit union, in the experience of credit unions, probably more like 10% will over time will join as an average. So that's not straight away, that'll be over time. So that still leaves 90% of the workforce that haven't opted in. So we've got this big disconnect between what people say they want to do or indeed would like to do and actually what they go ahead and do. So we're into an area here of, we're getting into areas of behavioural psychology and nudge theory where we're using opt-in savings, we're nudging employees towards a behaviour which is going to benefit them in the short to medium term and the long term, because it's going to encourage them to develop an emergency savings pot, which many people don't have. You know, interestingly, when we do nudge them into that behaviour, they seem to appreciate it. And what hasn't happened was that people turn around and said, this feels very paternalistic, I don't really like this. Why are you making me save a default savings account amount of this? It's too high. We haven't had any of that, Emma, have we really?
No. We've done surveys and also some qualitative research to look into that. And also SUEZ have employee committees and groups, so they get their sort of view internally. And overall, you know, people understand what's happening to their money, which is really important, because for an emergency saving account to have value, you have to know that you can access it in emergencies. You have to know that the savings are there. It has to be really clear where your money has gone and how you can access it. And people seem to be aware of that. And it also, because it's quickly accessible and it's flexible, so you can change the contribution amounts, it is a good way, we think, to encourage employees who maybe have lower levels of financial confidence to just give it a go, because they can just pull it out again if they want to.
I think there's a, you know, interestingly, there's a bigger sort of debate going on in credit union circles about this whole concept of financial interventions, for want of a better phrase. So, you know, benign interventions that actually encourage people to move towards behaviours that are going to benefit them and probably ultimately the credit union as well. You know, and getting members to save more is a challenge for a lot of credit unions. But it's how you do it. And I think ultimately you need digital tools or, you know, some sort of mechanism to nudge those behaviours. So there's a big debate around this, as I said, but certainly opt-in payroll savings is, you know, seems to be a very, very successful mechanism. And we've seen some pretty interesting results, Emma, aren't we, in terms of the percentage point increase. So I think from Transay's point of view, we, with Suez, we were seeing a opt-in rate that was pretty much tracking our average opt-in rate. It was before the scheme started, we had about 7% of employees signed up, and you know, I think we were fairly confident we were going to nudge 10% and maybe get up even further. But I think we're pretty confident now under this new scheme that we're going to be up around 50% of the entire employee base in the scheme. So that's a big difference.
And sorry, going back to you, Emma, you know, just looking at the opt-out saving scheme generally, I know you've sort of said about that Roger said there about that they've increased the opt-in rate up to nearly 50%, but is there, what else have you learned in terms of the scheme's effectiveness? Is there any other sort of areas that you've seen that effectiveness?
Yeah, so it's clearly very effective at increasing participation. So in the research that we're looking at, we look at tenure months, so those that have joined Suez, and then we sort of count their months so that we're comparing like to like in the pre and the post. And they're at 4 months tenure, so very early tenure. We see about 1% active savings account compared to 48% on the opt-out basis, which is huge. What's interesting, I think, is that we have another trial live with WageStream, as I mentioned, and two of their employers, and they have a different way of meeting the regulatory considerations. They have a different communication approach and actually a different research design too. And yet we find a very similar jump in participation. So from about 14% at 4 months after joining WageStream to about 68% in the opt-out group. So that's very similar to what we're seeing in the trial with Roger in a different context, which I think is really, really reassuring. What we also see in that trial is that we're also looking at an active choice model there. So remove the defaults entirely and ask employees, do you want to save? Yes or no. And we see, at least in the very early data, that study is only just it's only been live for about 6 months, we see that it's no better than opt-in. So if you ask the question, do you have to go as far as opt out in order to encourage participation, my answer at the moment would be yes, you absolutely do have to go that far. I think in terms of the sort of other things that are going well, thinking particularly about the trial with Roger and Transave and Suez, which has been running a little bit longer, I think it's really encouraging that we see that the product doesn't differ between, sorry, the use of the product doesn't differ between genders, ages, pay terciles, whether the employee is manual, so based primarily in the field, or salaried, often working primarily in the office. So it feels like, based on the data we have, that it is an inclusive approach. And as Roger mentioned, we have surveys and interview data that suggest that employees like the approach too, that it does help them, that they can see the value in it. Even those that are opting out tend to be quite positive about the scheme and think that the employer should offer it, even if it isn't of use to them at the time. In the Suez trial, we also see that people in the, not only do more people enroll, more people active in the scheme, they're also more likely to save more than in the opt-out group, at least in this sort of first 12 months of data that we can see. There is a default. So when you introduce an opt-out payroll saving scheme, you have to have a default. And in this trial, it was £40. And what we see is that it's a good default. People tend to stick with it. And where they do change, they are more likely on average to move it up to increase that amount. We're also looking at things like pension behaviour, use of flexible pay, so sometimes called earned wage access, drawing down on your earned salary before payday. We'll look at uptake of Transave loans. We have a number of self-report wellbeing measures. And really interestingly, we can also look at employees who have Transave accounts after they've left SUEZ. So do we build a habit that remains even when this payroll mechanism is severed? Do people set up a direct debit and continue to save? Do they continue to have active accounts? So there's really a lot we can look at, and the data we have so far suggests a positive picture. But we'll be continuing to publish more results on the trial as they come through.
And you sort of spoke about there about the, you know, sort of the advantages of the scheme, but have there been any sort of limitations that you've seen that have come through? I don't know if you could expand on that.
Yeah, so I think in terms of limitations, there are regulatory and legislative considerations for both the saving provider and for the employer wanting to offer this. Nest Insight have a paper which is available on their website that sort of looks into some of these regulatory considerations. Clearly, the live pilots show that they're not unsurmountable, but they do make it more challenging, particularly we think for small and micro employers with perhaps fewer time and financial resources. And we're looking into that a little bit more as we progress with the research in terms of what can be done to support employers that want to offer this.
So from a credit union perspective, Roger, what would you say are sort of some of the key things you've learned from the trial so far? What are some of the main sort of outcomes?
Well, I mean, I suppose the obvious outcome is that it works, you know. So we've seen it, you know, that I think this was a theory before it, you know, it's a trial, isn't it? So no one really knew what was going to happen. The theory was if you took this active choice away from people, made it easy for them, that we'd get far more people, you know, staying in the scheme, and that indeed has happened. So it does seem to suggest that people are very, very comfortable with that more interventionist approach to their financial health. So that will be the main thing. There is some increased administration involved. From a provider point of view, it's actually not too bad. And we've managed that process pretty successfully. You know, there's an issue about the actual mechanism that's used, and in SUEZ's case, so that's the mechanism for opt-out savings, and in SUEZ's case, you know, it was decided that they would sort of put together a program of emails to employees between the initial opt-out process starting and the employee being opted into Transave or enrolled in Transave, because we were really keen to avoid, you know, a lot of people who maybe hadn't quite understood the process then leaving the credit union going forward. So that's worked pretty well, but I think going forward for smaller employers, it would work better if the provider, i.e. Transave, you know, took care of that process. And indeed, we're doing that with one small employer at the moment who followed on the basis of the SUEZ trial, have also decided to go ahead with this. So, I think it's a minimal amount of extra administration for a much better result.
And do you see any any difference in terms of your other activities do you see? I mean, I know it's early days, but are people who does it make people more likely to use other credit union services, or is that loans?
I think, interestingly, what we've seen is a smaller uptake in loans from this cohort, and I think that's not that surprising, because I feel that they're probably more passive in terms of their, you know, overall activities. They're, you know, and that's probably inevitable when they've not had to opt in. You know, they've been opted in. So maybe TransSave's not as top of mind as it might be if they, you know, they'd have to go through that conscious process of deciding to do it. We've always got the option, obviously, of communicating with them, asking if they want to take a loan. We haven't actually done that in this particular case. But yeah, I would say a sort of slightly more passive response in terms of account activity, you know, and propensity to take on other products.
Mm. And I'm not sure whether this is for you, Roger, or for you, Emma, but why do people with this approach, why do some people still decide that they want to opt out? Do we know anything about who they are and the reasons for that?
So I think if we had an enrollment rate that was too high, we would be concerned, because people have savings elsewhere. Not everybody needs a savings account. It's not the right mechanism for everybody. Maybe you are only planning to be at the employer for a very short period of time, and so you don't want to connect in that way. Maybe you have other savings and investments elsewhere that you're happy with, and that works for you. So I think if we saw enrollment too high, we would be concerned that people just didn't realise that they could opt out. And we're not seeing that. The other thing is that we have taken baseline surveys. So we had an estimate of what we expected saving rates to be based on how many people thought that it would be useful for them, and also based on how many people self-reported having savings elsewhere. And that was around about 60%, maybe slightly lower for this population. So to hit the 50% mark feels about right. I think it also is important, though, to say that while we are targeting emergency savings, these accounts are not just for emergency saving, and actually pitching it in that way isn't necessarily the best way to do it. People much rather would like to think about saving for Christmas or a trip away or something like that than for their emergencies. But there are people that we've spoken to who do have savings elsewhere and actually might be quite sophisticated financial sort of consumers. And you might think, or maybe initially we thought, this product won't be of interest to them. And actually it is. It is still interesting to them. It is still an easy way to save when it's just coming out of payroll. There is a flexibility to it. You obviously are in a high quality saving product with TransSave, and there are benefits to that. You can join a price saving account. There is and Roger will be able to explain more about this than I can, but like sort of a bereavement benefit and things. There is access to the loan products if you need them. So there is more to it. That I think means that it is appealing to quite a wide audience of people, even if they do have savings elsewhere.
Yeah, I think so. Just to add to that, I think there was a major bit of research about 4 or 5 years ago into people's propensity to join a credit union or not, and it was a huge bit of research. There were thousands of people who surveyed, and what that found is about 45% of the UK population would join a credit union given all the information, you know, all the proper information. So almost half the population would join. So I think it's quite interesting that the SUEZ sort of opt-in rate settled at around that 50% mark. And as Emma said, not everyone wants to join a credit union, not everyone wants to be in a you know, in a workplace savings scheme.
And Emma, so sort of generally, what do organisations need to have in place to run a opt-out payroll savings scheme? Is there any sort of particular requirements or anything?
That is an interesting question. I think it's going to vary a little bit depending on employers. So their size, who their employees are they on variable pay? Do they have an opt-in payroll saving scheme in place, or do they need to choose one? How much time do they have to put into it? Because that might affect the approach that they take to it, the type of mechanism they put in place. But also not to overcomplicate it. I do think there is potential for any employer to give this a go. On the Nest Insight website, we have some employer guides on some of the sort of considerations an employer might want to think about when offering this. I would say that I think a key thing is thinking about the product that you pick for opt-out. We think it's really, really, really important that the product offered is quickly accessible and that it's flexible. So employees should be able to get to their money. They should be able to change and pause contributions. They should be able to close their account if they want to. They should be able to view their balance and do this all really easy. And that's particularly important for those on lower and volatile incomes, particularly that accessibility point. So I think we think it is possible for different organisations to run this. And if there are organisations out there looking to run it, we'd be really interested to hear from you about your experience of trying to implement something like that. This.
Yeah, I think I would just sort of answer that question as well, if I may, and just say, I think it's just down to the mindset of the employer. I don't think there are any barriers. You know, the barriers are probably, you know, in reality, the barriers don't really exist. It's more down to how interested the employer is to, you know, helping out the workforce.
And where there's a will, there's a way.
Where there's a will, there's a way. yes, there are a few more considerations than the standard opt-in savings scheme, where basically the employer does virtually nothing other than the payroll, you know, the payroll deduction side of things. There are some other considerations, but it's nothing really major. So it's really down to the motivation of the employer to help, you know, to help the workforce and improve the financial health of the workforce. You know, if they really want to do that, then the barriers are pretty much non-existent, I don't think.
And sorry, Emma, sort of, is there any sort of advice that you'd give to organisations that are looking to implement it? I know you've given quite a bit there, but is there any other further advice that you'd give to any future sort of organisation that's looking to implement it?
Yeah, I would say give it a go. I think it's, you know, it's going to vary slightly based on who you are, but I think, as Roger's mentioned, I think if you are keen to provide tools to employees that can support their financial well-being, then the evidence we have so far suggests that this is a really good one to use, and we'll continue to put out the evidence around it, but, you know, whatever we find, whether that's good or bad, with the aim of providing a sort of really strong evidence base and a holistic picture of the impact of these schemes on employees. So give it a go would be my advice.
Is there anything, Roger, from the, if you ask, looking at it from a credit union point of view, that you need to have in place to be able to run or run such a scheme?
Not really. I mean, it's from a credit union point of view, particularly with a credit union like Transave, you know, we only work with employers. So we work with, as I might have said at the start of the conversation, we work with 80 employers already, payroll savings. So there aren't any issues really. Yes, as I mentioned earlier, there's slightly more administration involved at our end, but it's pretty marginal. So no, from our point of view, it's something we could scale up pretty easily. But really, obviously, it needs the employers to buy into the concept.
That probably is quite a key point as well, actually, from the employer perspective, is that you do need to find a provider that is willing to offer this as well. Clearly, Transsafe have offered it to Suez and to another client. We've seen WageStream offer it to some of their employers, but in some instances, it is going to require a change of process on the provider side, or possibly the build in of a sort of new part of app development or something like that. So it is still relatively new in the market. So employers would need to discuss it with the sort of payroll providers, the credit unions, fintechs who, you know, that they're wanting to use. But yeah, I think on our side, you know, we'll be continuing to look at some of the considerations, some of the barriers that make this difficult for employers and for providers to implement, so that there is an opportunity for it to be scaled and for other employers to sort of join and providers to join too.
So Andrew, what did you take away from these discussions?
So I learned that, you know, when it comes to savings, there's this, you know, degree of disconnect between what are people's intentions and what is their behaviour. You know, so people say that they would like to join a payroll savings scheme, but they don't follow through. And this is due to, you know, multiple reasons such as inertia or a lack of awareness of the scheme. And this is where the opt-out payroll savings scheme comes in, as it's designed to, you know, address these issues by changing the default. So, you know, employers are automatically enrolled unless they opt out.
The evidence to date suggests that opt-out savings schemes are successful in overcoming some of the problems that you talked about, Andrew, in terms of inertia, in terms of lack of awareness. Nearly half, or 48% of employees, are active savers under the opt-out scheme 4 months in, compared with 1% of the control group. And that effect holds across a range of different employee characteristics. People are also much more likely to save greater amounts under opt-out compared with opt-in. And it's interesting that Nest Insight research suggests that asking all employees if they want to join a payroll savings scheme is no more effective than a regular opt-in scheme. So in other words, the opt-out element is critical.
And I think another sort of critical part, especially in terms of creating a good opt-out scheme, is choice. You know, the scheme needs to be, you know, transparent. It needs to have flexibility and accessibility. So, you know, people need to be able to easily, you know, check their balance and be able to easily and quickly withdraw savings, and also be able to quickly close their account. And I think another element of that choice is the ability to opt out. You know, this isn't going to be suitable for everyone. You know, some people already have existing saving accounts that are sufficient for them, and others, you know, may not intend to stay long with their employer. So, you know, the savings scheme doesn't make much sense for them.
But the survey evidence suggests that even those that opt out of the scheme still look upon the scheme as favorable. It's still something that they see as positive. Now, for credit unions and employers, there are some regulatory issues and administration to consider in terms of setting it up. And if you're an employer with very high turnover and a very small employer, it might be difficult to run. But however, overall, there are no real sort of major barriers in terms of credit unions, employers to set up and run an opt-out savings scheme.
So I think to summarize, we can say firstly that opt-out savings, you know, it increases the likelihood of employees, you know, saving through these payroll saving schemes, and also the amount that they save. And second, that we can say that the schemes have been well received, from what you said, Paul, by the workforce of, you know, participating employees. And at the same time, it's very, you know, it's fairly straightforward to set up and run.
In the next episode, we'll be talking about a rent flexibility scheme called Flex My Rent, with Damon Gibbons from the Centre for Responsible Credit and Gemma Glass from Southern Housing.
And that's the Innovation in Financial Inclusion podcast with Andrew and Paul. If you want to find out more or contribute to the discussion, go to hub.salford.ac.uk/CFS or follow us on Twitter at CFS_SBS. Bye for now. Thank you.